You are listening to the Nerd's Guide to Financial Independence podcast, episode number 14. You are listening to the Nerd's Guide to Financial Independence podcast, where real estate debt is good, all other debt is bad. Index funds are life, and retiring at 65 sounds like a death sentence. I am your host, Sarah King, solo mom of one, owner of six doors, lover of cash flow, Taco Bell, and bringing the debt conversation back into this leverage-loving world of real estate. Thank you for coming, my fellow aspiring retirees. Hey guys, sorry for the interruption, but I really wanted to come on here and talk to you about the management program that I use to manage my real estate properties. And it is called Avail. If you have not heard me talk about it, I'm extremely obsessed with it because it is like cozy on steroids. So I do all of my tenant screening through there. I can do background checks, I can do criminal checks, I can do eviction record reports. You can have the tenants pay for their own background checks. And you can also push your advertisement for your properties out on various platforms. And once you get it listed, people can apply. You can add custom questions to your pre-screen. And then once they're in, you know, the system and you've chosen your tenant, they can do all their rent collection through there. They can put their security deposits in. They can show proof of insurance. And my absolute favorite part, which is really hard to find, is it is a one-stop shop because I can do all of my lease forms electronically. Goodbye paper. This is my favorite thing, especially as a real estate investor that has aspirations to be a passive investor. I want it all to be able to be handled on my phone, and I can do that with Avail, which is awesome. So if you want to check it out, I highly recommend pop over to Instagram, go in my bio, click on the link, and right at the top, you're going to see my favorite, you know, landlord software right at the top called Avail. Please go check it out. All right. So I am Sarah and I'm here with Kata today. Hopefully I did a good job with your name. I really got connected with you through Josiah's podcast. And so I was so excited to have you on today. So he does The Daily Real Estate Investor and your interview was just amazing with him. I'm always excited to talk to fellow lady real estate investors. And if you guys haven't heard of Kata before, she is the model investor on Instagram. So how did you get started? Tell us a little bit about, it sounded like from your podcast with Josiah that you really have always been interested in real estate, but you hadn't really dove into it until more recently.
So I think I've always had a thing for real estate. Back in my 20s, I was traveling a lot internationally as a model, and I started to save a little bit of money. And the first thing that came to mind was like, oh, I'm going to had all these major ideas. Like yes. None of them actually came to anything, but I was like, oh, there's this warehouse in my local town. I wonder if I could turn it into apartments. Like I was like 21.
Yeah.
No idea how to do that. I did not have the money to be able to do that. And I remember meeting a real estate agent being like, I wonder if we could do this. And he was kind of into it. And then my parents kind of just talked me out of it, I think, because they were afraid of like borrowing money and just like, I didn't know a thing about it. But I always had this idea in my mind that I would do something like that, like with real estate. But I think it just kind of got put aside. I was traveling. I lived in Japan for 10 years. So throughout my 20s, I was in Japan. And I mean, investing there, doing anything with real estate in Japan is like impossible. As a foreigner, everything's tiny. There is just no real estate there. And so it wasn't, you know, I moved to New York. I had the idea still like one day, oh, I want to have this great house one day, or I want to build something in New Zealand, which is where I'm from. But again, never kind of thought like it could be a career or something that I could turn into like a business. And it wasn't until 2016, so about 4 years ago, you know, I was like mid-30s and I was getting tired of modeling. I've been modeling forever. And it kind of dawned on me that like modeling wasn't going to last forever.
Right.
And I just woke up one day and I was like, what am I going to do? Like I never went to university. So I started modeling from the age of 17. Yeah. So I don't have a formal education. I spent a lot of my 20s just having a great time and, you know, living this model life and not thinking about like educating myself for the for that moment when modeling would end, right?
Yeah.
I was like, oh, this is great, and just kept going with it. And 10 years, 20 years almost passed. And then I was like, I don't know what I'm going to do. I need to think about this. Like, I knew I was interested in real estate. I liked interior design. I was like, maybe I could be an agent. My father was an agent for a while. And then I was like, I was at the dentist on Madison Avenue. I was getting a root canal. Everything was horrible. I was spending like a fortune. And there was a magazine, there was an article in a Forbes magazine about why investing in rental properties was this great idea and why everyone should be doing it. And I picked it up and it was like the sign, you know. And I was like, I wonder if I could do that as like a non-US citizen, or like, I wonder if I have enough money, or like, how, this seems like a great idea.
Yeah.
That's what I thought at the time. And I was like, this is, it's almost like too good to be true. Like, what's the catch here?
Yeah.
And I just kind of, at that moment, I just became, I became completely obsessed with it. I spent about 6 months just reading every book, just learning. I mean, I didn't know a thing about borrowing money in the States, credit, building credit. Like, all of this was kind of new to me. And I wasn't even sure if it was going to work out. And then, you know, I realized that with the small amount that I'd saved from modeling before it ended and modeling came to a halt, I was like, I think I can buy a rental property with this and it'll make me a little bit of money. And that's like a start. And it was really just, you know, the push that made me do it was really just the realization that I was 36. My modeling career was probably, you know, expired milk. It had already run past it's the time that it should have, you know, I should still be modeling at that time. I was kind of on borrowed time. And this was an opportunity that I was like, I can actually do this and I don't have to take a course and I don't need a degree.
Nope.
And I could do it as a legal resident. I don't have to be a citizen. And I was like, this is great. So it really just started.
Yeah. So you could do it without having to be a formal citizen. You can do your
I have a green card. So as long as you have a you know, permanent resident status, you can get a loan.
I'm sure a lot of people are wondering that exact same thing who are here in the US, and they're like, okay, I want to invest in real estate, but you know, maybe they're not a citizen yet. So you can invest on a green card, which is really good.
100% Yeah. And interestingly, I was actually in between green cards. So I'd had an extension. So I had a 2 year before I got my 10 year and everything was kind of slow. You know, the immigration system is very slow and I had an extension.
I have a really good friend that's been through that process. She was from Canada and her husband was from, Middle East. And they both were like trying to live in the US together. And if that was such a struggle for them, they got married in the US and they had a baby and they're like just trying to get, you know, this to be their home
base.
It's
really hard.
It's a horrible process. And they like want to see like photos that like, are you really married to this man? And why do you both want to live in the United States? And you're both from different countries.
It's crazy. My husband's American, so it didn't make it any easier on us, you know?
Right.
So, but it was really no problem. I just had to show, you know, the bank my extension letter. So yeah, if anyone's wondering out there, like, can I do, I'm not a US citizen. You don't have to be. And credit, of course. Start building credit as soon as you get to the US. That is the most important thing.
Yes.
I think
it's ridiculous is it crazy to you how much of the US is based on credit scores? Like how much like car insurance and like everything is this magical credit score?
It is. And I've become obsessed with it since. I was almost in tears yesterday because I had a hard credit pull for a new loan. And I was like, no. Oh, I dropped 4 points.
I try not to look at mine because I'm like, it fluctuates kind of over time. So depending on what all you're trying to get lent to you. So
exactly.
Don't look, it go up, comes and goes. And I know I pay on time. So eventually it'll come back.
I think the hardest thing was just my credit history wasn't, I think my average credit history, even now after being in the States for 10 years, is only 3 years and like 4 months or something. That's the only thing. But my only advice would be if you're moving to the US, get a credit card, like even just the smallest credit card, even if it's just $200, pay off $10 each month, start building it, you know?
Everyone does like Netflix or Hulu or something. I always tell people like put some kind of recurring something like your Spotify. If you're doing any subscriptions, just like pop your little subscriptions on your credit card and pay it off every month on auto pay. And then you are building credit and you're just like watching Hulu. So it's a good way to kind of keep up your usage. Yeah.
Yeah. See, you're the expert with this stuff. I've actually learned a lot about financial stuff from you and your content, which is really great. Yeah.
That means a lot. Because I know you were talking about your parents were like afraid of like borrowing money when you were younger. Do you think they were like, were they very debt adverse? Did you learn any kind of financial tips from them? Or
I mean, I hope they're not watching this. They won't. No. But to be honest, I really think, and I also see it in my brother, very conservative. Mm-hmm. Like my parents purchased their property, their home that, you know, they've lived in forever. It was cash, just savings from like a corporate job.
That's awesome. Yeah.
Never any like
debt. I'm the weird like debt hating person though. So I'm like very adventurous in real estate. I'm somewhere between probably you and your parents.
So, right. Yeah. Because I'm like the other way now. And sometimes I try and encourage my brother. I'm like, just take out one loan and like leverage that because you could do so much with that. But he's just happy, like no debt. So, you know, my parents, I think it was difficult for them because, you know, I started making a fair bit of money at a young age.
Right.
Blew through it all. Can I just add that? So,
yeah, I think that's good because that's real because I'm sure wondering, you know, when you got started, you're like, oh, do you have all this money from modeling? And you're kind of like, I kind of looked around and said, do I have enough for a down payment? I think you said in one of your interviews, and I'm like, for real, that's real. I mean, that's where most people are at.
Yeah. I mean, it was my 20s and like, I was suddenly making money like an adult, you know, almost like a salary amount.
Yeah.
And I think my parents just didn't know what to do with it. I mean, real estate would have been perfect. I needed debt. I was paying a lot of taxes.
Yeah.
Taxes are high in New Zealand for like self-employed, you know, I was self-employed. I was in the highest tax bracket, which isn't super high there. It's not like the state. So again, I wasn't making that much money, but, and I, you know, we got financial advisors, but they were working for a certain, you know, so I had a stock portfolio. I didn't have a clue about that. Yeah. I used to get checks in the mail for my dividends and cash them and use them instead of, I was shopping.
And like reinvesting. You're like, let's go.
I should have reinvested, but I was like, oh, I got $1,000, you know, or something, or $200 from that stock. I mean, I just.
At least you were investing. A lot of people would have literally just blown it.
At, you know, later on, I pulled everything out when I moved to New York. And that was where things kind of really went downhill because I pulled, you know, I cashed out my portfolio and work was really hard. I really struggled to work the first couple of years and I just lived off this money. And like I said, things just went really downhill and I just saved myself at the end with the last little bit of savings that I had and I got a wake up call.
That's at the dentist office doing your root canal. Where did you even begin when you're like, okay, I'm going to start doing this or take a look at this?
I mean, this is kind of embarrassing and I don't advise it because it's such a rookie mistake, but I Googled best real estate markets to buy rental properties 2016.
Yeah. I mean, people do that all the time. I mean, Bigger Pockets literally puts out a list of places to invest that people pick off of. So
I wasn't even on Bigger Pockets yet. I wish I had have been, but I think I got onto them about a year later. Mm-hmm. But there were a couple that came up and Fort Worth, Texas was one of them.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, oh, Texas. Okay, well, that sounds good. And at the time, I didn't know much about cash flow. I was kind of going for appreciation. I was like, oh, the property prices were really going up. So if I invest there.
Right.
That kind of made sense to me right at the time. I mean, I tried to read as much as I could, but I still needed to go through the process and learn a lot more.
Because I know you said you switched from like looking at appreciation to like, holy moly, all I care about is cash flow. And then you've really gone the other way to good cash flow.
I have.
What was your aha moment where you're like, I actually need cash flow?
I mean, I think it's when I realized after that first property and realizing how easy, not easy, but like, it wasn't that difficult to get a loan and I loved the process. I mean, I was all over it. I liked the underwriting. I liked sending documents in. I couldn't believe that I was getting a mortgage. It was the most exciting thing that had ever happened.
Oh my gosh. That's amazing. And I was usually like, people hate the underwriting process.
I know. Oh, I hate it now.
Yeah.
But I was
when they ask like your kidney and your firstborn and
like, where'd you have a breakfast? Like,
yes.
But I couldn't wait to do it again. And it dawned on me that, like, okay, if I could just take this last little bit of money and make a little more, mm-hmm. I mean, I needed the cash flow because I was worried about modeling. And I was like, exactly. I wonder if there's anywhere else that I can purchase that. I mean, Texas doesn't cash flow very well, I have to say, for the amount of mm-hmm. money that you put down. And the properties are a little more expensive compared with where I invest now.
Did you keep your first property that you bought in Texas?
I sold it last year. I'm happy that I did. I reinvested the gain. It had gone up a lot. I reinvested the gain in a commercial property, which does really well now. But there was something so nice about, I mean, the neighborhood was really nice. It was easy to manage, not a mm-hmm. peep out of the tenants. Now I have I invest in like rough neighborhoods and mm-hmm. like it's a lot more handholding. It's a lot more work.
Yeah.
So sometimes I kind of like, I miss my little Texas dream that was not making any money, but it was so easy, you know.
Yeah.
But I think I needed to get out of that comfort zone and, you know, I needed the capital and it just kind of made sense. It had gone up so much and I was actually worried that prices in Texas were going to drop because it had had such
such a steep climb.
And I was like, it's now or never, or I hold on to this thing for 10 years. And I was like, I'm going to get it out. So
because you're producing so much higher cash flow on your other properties. You're like, it just doesn't fit your model anymore of what you're going for.
It doesn't fit my model. But you know what, when you mention that, I think at some point I would like to meet somewhere in the middle.
Yeah.
So I think soon maybe I don't have to be as focused on the cash flow, but maybe just a slightly better neighborhood or a different market that is appreciating as well and kind of mm-hmm. find that balance just to take a little stress off, you know.
Yeah. Your neighborhoods are probably a lot more challenging to manage.
Yeah. And I mean, some of them are like, I mean, depending right now, some of the properties are even probably C-, just because the city with COVID, the unemployment, mm-hmm. I mean, things are getting a little crazy up there.
So, and remind people where you invest, because I know. I realize we haven't told anyone.
That's right. Syracuse, New York.
Yes. Okay. But you actually don't live in New York, which is one of the big reasons I wanted to talk with you, because people are always so afraid of investing out of state. And so you actually live in
Jersey City.
Yes. Yeah.
New Jersey,
so how far away are you from your properties? Like your hours?
I'm on a good day, 4.5 hours.
Okay.
Or
so
I
if
can
you had
fly.
To get up there, you could, but
100%.
Yeah.
But I don't have we don't have a car here. Like sometimes I fly up like for a closing or something, but I think I've been there a total of probably like 4 or 5 times. So yeah, out of state, I have to say it's challenging. Mm-hmm. I think if I lived up there, I would be so dragged down by like everything and just all the worry and the stress. And like, I get really emotionally attached to my properties and my tenants. Yeah. And like, mm-hmm. I think just being separated actually helps me be able to be involved without being like, I mean, I know I would wear myself thin just driving by or like, I need to check on, see what's happening there. Like I'm so micromanaging that I think being away from the properties 4 hours is kind of good for me. But I mean, 2 weeks ago, I took over management. So now I self-manage and I have 30 units at the moment.
Wow. That's amazing.
So it's been an interesting couple of weeks.
Are you surviving?
But I'm enjoying
it. Are you glad that you're learning?
I am. You know, it's really interesting. And like, I really am learning a lot. And I think it's going to get easier. It's just mm-hmm. right now I have to get all my like systems in place.
Yeah.
I'm still like finding my team and it's like, testing people, are they reliable? Am I able to, you know, how many people do I really need? Just kind of stuff.
Do you have
like
any horror stories or surprises over the last few weeks that you've encountered?
Well,
tell me about your last few weeks. I feel like there is a story there.
I have one story. So I had told management, you know, basically my management company was closing.
Okay.
So they gave me the option. They're like, I'm like, do you think I could self-manage these? And they were mm-hmm. like, I don't know. It's like a lot, but I think you could do it. So I slept on it or didn't sleep one night. And I was like, I woke up in the morning. I was like, all right, I'm going to self-manage instead of just transferring it to another property manager. And I was like, I'm going to connect with my properties. I'm going to see what's going on, see how hard this is. And if mm-hmm. it doesn't work out, I'll move it then. Someone can take it. Right.
Yep.
But I was like, I may as well take this as like a sign that I have to get more involved and I need to learn some experiences. It's like one day in And they've kind of told me they'll help me, but like, it's not official that I'm managing yet. But right. then I get an email from the management with a voice message, and it's one of the tenants.
Mm-hmm.
She's probably the most difficult tenant that I have,
mm-hmm.
Of course. And this is the first voicemail I get. And they're just like, one of the tenants is like yelling on the phone, her fridge stopped working. And it's Friday mm-hmm. night. I'd just gone into New York City to go and meet girlfriends for drinks.
Of course.
And I'm like, oh no. Okay.
So and your girlfriend's like, what are you doing, girlfriend? Like, this is ridiculous.
They're like, why did you do this? So it's like 7 p.m. and I'm like, where am I going to get a fridge from? Like, I had a couple of contacts already.
Right.
Just from, you know, I kind of arrange my own appliances, but I'm like, oh no, this is a disaster on a Friday night. It's like sweltering hot up there on this day. It was like, I don't know, 90 something degrees. I wasn't really sure of the urgency of this, of course, because everything's kind of new. And I'm like, all right. So I message a couple of people and they're like, maybe we can get a fridge to you next week. So I'm like, all right. Then I get a call the next day and this tenant is just absolutely livid. Like, I kind of thought that maybe the management was sort of helping me with this a little bit and they yeah. were going to get the call or call her back, but it was a lot of lost in translation. So she leaves yeah. me this message. And I mean, she said every word in the like cursing alphabet. And
did you learn new things?
So, I mean, the thing was, she said like, if I ever see you, you better hope I never see you. And I was like, oh my God. I'm like, I've just been threatened. You know, this, all these things.
This was a really intense day one experience.
I'm just like, I'm not going to be able to do this. So I call everyone that I know and I'm like, we have to get a fridge there. This is a disaster. Please like help me with something. Management are like, we don't have any loan fridges at the moment. Cut a long story short. I mean, it was kind of a horrible thing because she had just gone to she's on food stamps,
mm-hmm.
quite a poor tenant. And she had just gone to the grocery store, all of her stuff, her meat, everything was defrosting. It was yep. a mess in her house. She had a baby. The baby was in the hospital. I mean, it was just like the worst case scenario. And I felt so bad.
Yeah.
We got a fridge delivered.
Uh-huh.
Everything was fine. Things calmed down. Lowe's delivered one.
Good.
She calls me a few hours later and she's like, the fridge isn't working. So my defense
is already
a little up. And I'm like, what could it be now? So I call the old maintenance guy and he runs over there. Cut a long story short, it was a faulty fridge. Lowe's had delivered a brand new $650, by the way.
Faulty fridge. I know, fridges are so expensive.
So this is like 5 days now that she, like, this was like Tuesday.
Did you buy her food twice then? I'm guessing that's where this is.
So this was, I had to talk to a caseworker. I mean, Lowe's were amazing. They refunded me $60, got another fridge out immediately. I had someone go over there with a gift card because they said, don't give cash. It's better to give her a gift card to the store that she wants to go to. I checked exactly. what store she shops at. Because that was a whole nother thing too. I'm like, how much do I give her? Do I give her cash? How do I get her the cash? I'm not there.
And then also you want to make sure it goes to food.
It was a disaster. Just never know. I was just like, I am not going to be able to handle this kind of stuff. You know, I mean, is this my daily life now?
Yeah.
But then amazingly, everything calmed down. She was super grateful. She called, she said, thank you. She's like, I'm sorry, I was so upset. It was just like, you know, mm-hmm. it's been a really tough week. And now we're great. She's
good.
We're all good. They took the fridge away. I mean, that's as bad.
Is she still going to like stalk you on the street if you walk by or if she meets you or whatever she's done in her threats?
I hope she doesn't have Facebook or something. I mean, I wouldn't know. Like I said, it's kind of nice being removed. I'm glad that I'm not up there. Because it's a little scary. I don't know. I mean, but I think she's used to dealing with property managers that don't care.
Yep.
So she already came in hot on me because she was screaming. She's used to that, having to deal like
I inherited some tenants that were just so angry. And I'm like, listen, this is my house. Like, I want it to be good. Like, we
it's work together.
And like, let's work together. Like, we had the most ridiculous problem. So I bought a duplex and it was separately metered, separately, like everything was separate. But for some reason, the electrical box on the unit we were renovating
was connected to the water pump in the other unit. And I have no idea why, but we're like turned off the breaker box, like whatever. We're just like doing electrical work over here. And we turned off this lady's water and she thought we were like evicting her. And it was like this horrible scenario.
Oh,
and
no.
She called and was like screaming and like so mad and she didn't have any running water. And then I was super mad at my husband because I thought he broke something. And then
it's just like
it was like such a simple breaker. And you're just like, why? Like you just wouldn't think that was what was going on. So for some reason, the breaker in the other house was actually the breaker for both houses' water supply.
That's
but
so
it's like
strange.
Little things like that, but just such, you know, so angry. And like, I can't believe you're doing this to me. I'm like, I'm not doing this to you. We'll get it fixed. I dropped her off like a case of water, told her to like hang tight for a minute until we figured it out. And she was so surprised when I showed up like 20 minutes after she called with like a case of water to be like, hold on, we're going to figure this out.
Yeah.
She was so used to people not answering her calls.
That's
or I guess
thing.
Like she would yell and they wouldn't do anything. And I'm like, well, if it
That's
were me, I would
realized.
Want running water. And I think you're like the same thing. We're like, well, if it was me, I wouldn't want my food to spoil and my fridge to be not working. So I'm going to help you out, of course. And
100%.
They were so surprised.
Yeah.
And she still to this day was like, I couldn't believe you really came out that fast. I'm like,
But isn't that kind of sad too? I mean, that's
so
the thing.
Sad.
And
but
that's what I realize, you know, there's a lot of property managers, a lot of out of state investors, unfortunately, that just hand everything to property managers. Property managers just run the show.
Right.
They don't care. They screen calls. They don't get back to people. And so when a tenant actually gets someone on the phone, they just go for it because
they're like,
I've got 2 minutes. And I mean, I get it. It's very stressful, but like, I think a lot of the tenants and a lot of my tenants that I've spoken to have just said, we're so grateful that you're so kind and we're really happy and we really like you because we can tell that you care about us.
Yeah.
And I think that is so important. And it takes such a, I mean, yeah, it takes a little more time, there's a little more hand holding, but like, that's what we should be doing. I mean, these people shouldn't
care
have
people.
Roaches or they shouldn't have a bath thing that leaks into the basement, you know, or like you shouldn't have to live like that. And I feel like a lot of property managers don't take those things as like a high priority. And I think it's a real shame because
And it doesn't take a ton of effort to just be good to people. Like it really doesn't.
It doesn't. It's
and it doesn't take that
nice
much money
to
renovate a house nice. Like it's like, I'm like my vinyl, we're in the world of like vinyl plank and you can tint any paint color, any, you know, Sherwin-Williams color you'd like. And
exactly.
It's just, I mean, appliances are always expensive, but it's, you know,
I got a great deal today. So I was on Facebook Marketplace. So I've been spending
my favorite
a
place.
Fortune.
Yes.
I've been spending a fortune on appliances and I'm like, this is just getting crazy.
Yeah.
So I have an empty 3-unit at the moment that, I mean, an empty, 3-bedroom in a duplex and it needs a full renovation and the appliances that came were horrible. And I was like, I am not spending $1,000 on a new gas stove and a fridge. This is crazy.
Yeah.
So I get on Facebook Marketplace. Sure enough, there's a fridge for $150,
a
gas
steal.
Stove for $150. It's a lady that her mother passed away and she's just getting rid of stuff.
Yeah.
And I had my guy with a truck just go over there, pick it up. He disconnected the gas for her and it's in one of my garages that I have like storage in some garages. I'm just going to leave them there until I need them.
Yeah.
And $300 all in.
Oh yeah. Scour Facebook Marketplace. It's my
Facebook
favorite
Marketplace
thing.
Is
I
the
have
best.
Always test your appliances though, because I had like Stovegate where I had like 3 non-working stoves that I was just collecting.
Good point. That's not great. She said, Diane, I talked to her on the phone.
Yeah.
She seems like a trustworthy person. She said everything was working. So
with that scenario, you know, just wanting to have to get out of her mom's things. I feel like that's a pretty legit story.
Good point.
How'd you meet your people on the ground, like your boots on the ground? So your guy with the truck and all of your, how'd you find your network of people?
It's really word of mouth. So my guy with the truck, he's like my trash guy, actually. He does, he does like trash removal. Like when someone's like cleaning out a house, like he's got this huge truck, he loads everything and he can get rid of sofas. He takes everything to the dump and like, he's like the trash guy.
Yeah.
So I had him do a job for me at one property and he's like, hey, you're using these garages. I have these garages that I'm supposed to be renting out, but I wasn't mm-hmm. sure about the area and if it would be safe, really. It was like right. trying to figure that out.
Yeah.
He's like, I would love to use those. I have trucks. I have things I can put in them, and I will take care of all of your trash and the lawns and keep an eye on your 7-unit for you. And if you need trash or removal, or I'm at your disposal. And I was
and you're
like,
I love you.
This is the best thing ever. Yes.
Yes.
You're hired, but like not even hired, because there's no money changing hands. He just right. like takes care of things. He has my garages. So I met him through my contractor.
Good.
Who yeah. I met through my broker, Frank. Again, just word of mouth, doing a few jobs together. And then, mm-hmm. I mean, it's really just, a lot of it is really just word of mouth in the smaller towns, you know, mm-hmm. and then doing a couple of jobs and then really clicking. And yes. being like, I love this guy.
Or yeah.
he gets what I want to do.
And they're just you know? So easy to work with. I'm like, if someone can like text me and we send some pictures back and forth of what we're trying to do, we will exactly. be best friends. Like if we yep. can, you know, if I can text you my HVAC questions, we're going to be really yeah. good friends.
Exactly. Yeah. And I mean, good deals. It's like, it saves money. I can trust them to do the job. I've realized being out of state, Venmo is my friend.
Oh yeah.
Because a lot of the guys want to be paid cash or whatever. And it's yep. like, I can't pay someone $20 an hour to run to the bank, get cash out, meet them, drop right. the cash off. Do you know what I mean? So
yes, yeah.
I always ask people, do you have Venmo or Zelle Pay? Because like, I can yep. send you money that way. So mm-hmm. yeah, I mean, it's all these things that I'm still working out.
I finally found a home inspector that accepts Venmo. And so he's Ooh. Like number one on my list right now.
See, stuff like that. It's great.
He's like, it saves me money. I'm like, well, it helps me out too, because Venmo just makes my world go round. So yeah.
Yeah. It's so good. I mean, I kind of want to support the post office right now, so I don't right. mind sending checks.
Right.
But you know, it's like snail mail, and it's just Venmo's just instant. I can forget about it.
Yeah.
I plug it into my Stessa or whatever, and it's just done, you know.
Do you use that as well? Is it stressful?
I like Stessa.
I've never tried it. It's on my list of like things I should try, but I haven't yeah. used it yet.
You so should try it.
Do you do
it's
all
free.
Your bookkeeping with it?
I do. So
I'm terrible. I have Excel still. So tell me about your bookkeeping and how you started using that.
Well, so, you know, up until recently on site, so my property manager would send me like full detailed, you know, he sends mm-hmm. me a 1099 at the end of the year, et cetera, et cetera. And it was getting hard to, as my portfolio grew, it was getting hard to, right. Break everything up. Like, you know, property managers send you one check at the end of the month and you're yep. like, oh, okay, now I have to go and plug in that came from that place, that came from that apartment, kind of. So I was like, all right, I need a better system. I downloaded QuickBooks.
Oh, it's horrible.
I hated it.
I sweared at it for like 2 days and then couldn't do it anymore.
Me too. I had a nervous breakdown. I felt like,
I no,
felt
I
so
did.
Dumb.
I think it involved wine. We were talking about this earlier. Like, I think I had like alcohol and swearing. And then finally it was like, I can do Excel faster than this. This is ridiculous.
I really was really disappointed with QuickBooks. I just, yeah. and my accountant's like, it's so easy. And I'm like, but it's not, Alan. It's not easy. I don't get it.
Alan, and this I'm is on not a Mac. Working.
Alan, it's just not working for me. So I already had my stuff in Stessa. I just hadn't really gone into detail with it. I was just tracking like the, just like a few simple things. So mm-hmm. I connected my bank accounts to Stessa. So every transaction now goes through there, and then I can just add. I mean, it's just so much easier. I really like it. And
good, because I've been looking for bookkeeping because I don't want to do Billium yet, because I feel like I'm not yeah. there with my level yet to manage. And right. I really like my management program I use, but yeah. I'm like, I need to do something better than Google Sheets for my yeah. bookkeeping.
But try Stessa. And you know, I've printed out, you know, because I've had to apply for a couple of loans recently, and they have a great P&L, and like, you can do a stress test on the portfolio, and there's all these great things, and you can do it by property.
Cool.
It's really good. I like
because
it.
It's built for real estate specifically. And I think that was the hurdle exactly. for QuickBooks, is it's just not,
it's not
intuitive to real estate. And people said the desktop version was better, but I'm like, but I traveled for work
at the time. I got that, and it's not.
And I'm like, no, it wasn't. It didn't seem that easier. And then I'm like, also, if I'm on the road, I want to be able to do it from my phone. So I'm just not messing with
this. Yeah. Also, it's like, you have to call your tenants customers, or like, I just want to be like, this, I just want to call my tenants, and I want my properties. Yeah. I don't, you know, it's like, it's just confusing.
I'm like, there are so many real estate investors in the world. There has to be better things. So this must be possibly my answer.
I think this is good. The only downside about Stessa is they don't have a portfolio loan. So I have a couple of loans that have several properties, and it won't break it down.
Yeah.
So it only lets you put, so what I do is I just put the one property and I put the full loan amount and everything, but then I do it by unit. Unit one would be the other property, unit two would be the third one. But it's they said, I keep emailing them about it. They said it's going to get better, but I don't know.
That's interesting. Yeah, because I have Yeah, because all of mine are in a portfolio loan together. Are my three main properties. I guess my house hack is separate, but
right.
I just had grouped them all together, so that would be kind of a hurdle for me. But I can do them as separate.
Look
units.
Into it. Have a play around and see. But I know they're trying to facilitate that into the software soon. So hopefully, fingers crossed. Yeah.
Yes. You should send me a DM when that magic happens.
I will.
The portfolio loans are working out.
Excuse me. When is this happening?
My friend Sarah and I are very interested in learning when you're going to make this happen for portfolio loans.
Exactly. Yep.
So after your first deal in Texas, did you know right away that you wanted to kind of move into a different market? How did you end up, investing where you're at?
I can't remember who I was talking to. Might have been an attorney or something for some other business. And I was like, I'm really getting into real estate investing. And he's like, you should look in New Jersey. And I was like, I don't have the budget to be looking in New Jersey.
Right.
But he's like, start looking at some cash flowing markets that are within driving distance.
That's smart.
In the area, have a look upstate and I was like, oh yeah, I hadn't even thought about that. Like, it'd be good if I could drive there at least.
Right. Have the option.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. So again, I think at that point I just started researching like cash flowing
Google
neighborhoods. Cash flowing markets. And
the takeaway from this is Google and the internet can teach you everything you need to know about life.
Exactly. And I looked at a few upstate towns. It was Ithaca, Utica, Rochester. I think I looked at Albany, and I was like, I decided to settle on Syracuse after just kind of seeing the prices of like seeing what rent comparables were and then how much I could buy stuff for. And I was kind of shocked by how cheap stuff was, but the rents are high there. That was the interesting thing. I was like, this is really interesting because I can buy a $60,000 single family. 20% down, all in for $18,000.
Yep.
And it rents for $1,200.
Yeah.
But my property in Texas was only rented for $1,400, and I had twice the capital tied up in that. So I was like, wow, the rents are really high in Syracuse.
And it's drivable.
It's drivable. So I was like, I could really, again, Mrs. Queen of Leverage over here, I was like, I could really spread this then and like get a couple more properties. And at that point, I think I purchased three quite quickly with the money that I had. And I started to realize that the cash flow was going to really, I've started seeing some real cash flow each month. And I was like, wow, this is really a great return on investment. The properties that I was buying back then were in better areas. And
how did you learn your market to know what areas to invest in or not invest in? Did you work with a realtor to figure it out?
I have a broker. It was just really just trial and error. Like I would see something on Zillow and I would send it to him and he would be like, no, that area is bad. Mm-hmm. And I would remember it. I kind of made a note, oh, that's bad, but this is good. But that end of the block is bad, but this is good. It was really just kind of taking the data that he was,
How do you get connected to your broker for people that are just
found him on Zillow?
Awesome.
Found him on Zillow. He had the most like investor friendly reviews and
awesome.
He seemed to be great for like real estate investors. More when I first, that was one thing, and it's one thing I like to tell people now, is make sure that if you want to get into investing, to find a broker or an agent that either invests themselves or they work with investors specifically. Because I used a residential agent mm-hmm. for my first property in Texas, and yeah. I think she was even working for the seller as well. Like, I didn't know a thing. I think she was yeah. a listing agent.
Yeah.
And I could have got that property a lot cheaper. And, you know, there were a lot of things that I should have known about as an investor, but I kind of went into that market just buying like I was shopping for a home.
Right.
But I always say, always get a buyer's agent, find a buyer's agent that's investor friendly, has some investment properties themselves.
I think the good news too is about that first property is you were like, I didn't buy it well, and I would have bought it totally different, but you still did it. You survived, and you now have 30 units. And I feel like people are just so afraid to get started. And it's like, you just have to start and figure it out.
You
like you meet people in your market, you'll start developing a network.
Out.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think you can read every book and you can watch every Bigger Pockets webinar and listen to all the podcasts. But until you take that first step and go out on your own and try it, you won't know. You know, you have to just make that first step and right. you'll figure it out. You're never
going to have
everything.
Some sort of level of like scrappiness of like, I'm just going to make this happen and we're
yeah.
going to figure it out. Like me and yep. my water heater. Like, I feel like your story
exactly.
is very similar where you're like, you know, I was like, what market's going to work? I need cash flow. I'm going to replace my modeling, you know, career
yeah.
income with this, and we're
yep.
going to make it happen.
And
so I feel
it'll
like
work
you...
out. And I think even when things don't go as planned, and I mean, there have been some disaster stories for sure.
Yeah.
Everyone regrets something that they've purchased.
Right.
I think at some point.
Yeah.
I mean, not everyone, but you know, it's never
I
going
think
to
most
be
people that have if you're taking risks, you'll probably find something you regret along the way.
Yeah, but with risk is great reward, right? And like we learn something even with every mistake. I learned even just how I dealt with that fridge scenario.
Yeah.
You know, I learned that I needed to be more urgent, or I needed to handle that better. I know I need to have appliances in my garage now for emergencies
right.
like that in
yeah.
the summer, you know? So it's like, it's a disaster, but you learn from it and you get better and you get better. But I think ultimately it's just about not overthinking and educating yourself enough to where you're like, okay, I've run the numbers. I think I know enough, but then just like do it.
Yeah.
Don't overthink it.
Yeah. Because I think you're such a good example of just kind of figuring it out and just like trying different markets. You weren't afraid to try things out and get started.
Yeah.
Because like, I love houses.
I love,
you know, and I think that's what I'm trying to figure out right now is just like, there's so many people that know real estate or like know how to do lawn care or know how to do plumbing. And there's just so many people that know home things that you can really build a network. And it's not as scary as people make it seem.
Yeah.
Like it is.
And whatever you don't know, you can find someone that's going to help you, you know, and quite often just out of the goodness of their own heart, someone will help you reach out to people. You know, I have people reaching out to me all the time, like, oh, could you give me some advice on this? Or like, how would you do this? Of course, I'm going to help you, you
yeah.
know?
But that mentality probably helped you build your network of people that are also willing to help kind of be your boots on the ground when you're 4 hours away. So.
Exactly. And there's definitely been a couple that I'm just like I had a leaky toilet recently and a guy was supposed to go. He was like mm-hmm. on my top list of like
yeah.
people that I thought I could count on. And I was quite excited about him. He just never showed up.
Ugh.
So
there's so
like
many
that.
People that don't show up and it makes me crazy. Yeah.
You know? Yeah. But luckily I've kind of been so busy that I didn't even give it a second thought. I just took him off my whiteboard.
Yeah.
And I found someone else in the job and I moved on from it. You know,
do you find like some satisfaction erasing him off your whiteboard?
I do.
Like,
you know,
you're off the list.
Erasing things off my whiteboard is the best thing that I do at the moment. I love it. It's like, it's whether it's like someone paying rent. If they pay, I wipe that off. Or if it's like I have a repairs list of like mm-hmm. properties that need maintenance and I wipe that off. And it's like, it's really exciting. It's these small things that I love now, you know?
So tell us where
so.
Your portfolio is now. So we kind of walked through your first one and kind of transitioning to your new market. And so you said you're at 30 units. Is that
so? Yeah.
Single
so
family?
Right now
walk
I have,
me, break me through what you have.
I have 14 properties for 30 units, but I do have a 3-unit on the market right now. So that'll drop back down. So
yeah.
I've kind of tried to not focus too much on, you know,
right.
I went through a stage of like, oh, I want to get to 20 units and then I
yeah.
get to 20.
25. I'm trying to not set unit by unit goals. I'm like money, like cash flow goals, but it's so hard. Yeah.
I know, because it's so fun and you're like, oh, I just closed another one. But then you sell something and you're kind of going backwards, but you're not going backwards. You're still moving forward. But anyway, right. So I have 14. So I have a 7 unit, a duplex, two duplexes, 2 3 units, a bunch of singles, and a mixed use commercial property. So that has 5. So that one has like a bodega, like a, you guys don't call them bodegas. That's very New York thing. So like a corner store market.
Oh, cool.
Grocery market. Uh-huh. Like a, in New Zealand, we call them dairies, I think, like a convenience store, I guess.
Yeah.
Corner market. And that has 2 apartments upstairs and then another 2 behind it. So that's my like,
and that's what you traded the Texas house for, didn't you?
That's right.
That was your deal.
I was so excited for that. And I don't think it was the only property I had to put 25% down on because it's mixed use. So I get 20% down with all my other stuff.
Right.
Even my 7 unit, I was able to put 20% down, which was great.
Is that on a portfolio loan also?
No, local bank, but the kicker is, before anyone gets too excited, is it's a adjustable 5. It's fixed for 5 years and then it adjusts for 25. So that's going to, I'm going to be crying in about 5 to 10 years probably when the rate jumps. But for now, I'm loving it. So I just have a great relationship with that bank and that's kind of the mortgages that they offer. So I'm like, I'll figure it
when
out.
When you do local banks, do you do where you live right now or do you do up where your properties are?
Local to where my properties are.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because they get where they get the houses you're buying, they get the neighborhoods, that kind of thing. I was always thinking that's probably the way to go.
Yeah. My bank's in Rochester and, you know, my property's in Syracuse. So it's, I mean, it's like an hour and a half drive. So they're not like right local, but local within that area. Mm-hmm. I think if I went to a New Jersey bank, they would be like,
what are you doing?
Also, you know, I thought one of the issues with my properties would be that they're not super expensive. So I have loans on properties that were $40,000-$50,000.
Right. Yeah.
So you definitely need the local banks that understand that market for those, but you can get some great deals.
Because there's a lot of people out there I see on like Facebook forums that are like, oh, I can't get financing because the house is too low in price. And I'm like, you're just not hunting. You have to hunt hard for these small local banks. I'm gonna need like a soapbox called like the small local bank soapbox where I just like get on there and preach like, do not use big lenders, like search locally and develop relationships. Real estate's a relationship business and kind of so is lending.
And it's hard, right? It's like when I was looking for a loan for my first property, I went to Wells Fargo? I walked into TD Bank and I'm like, I want to get a loan for a house.
And, like,
and they were like, no, you know, basically. So I think, you have to, the smaller you go, and again, it's really about relationships because the 7 unit that I closed on and right in the middle of COVID, when every banks were pulling out on people or they were just, it was a disaster. I was able to close that and get another loan for a 3 unit that I just closed on. And
that's
they barely even asked for any documentation or anything. They were like, okay, we know you're good for it. It was the easiest loan ever. I'm so spoiled. I just want to get loans with them forever. But they did actually tell me that they needed to take a little break with me for a few months. So they, my guy was like, I don't want to hear from you until January of next year because we need to let these loans season.
Like season a bit.
But I'll push this one through for you. And I was like,
do you have any friends in another bank that I can talk to?
Exactly. But that's relationship building right there. You know, like that just goes to show because I could never have got that done otherwise if I hadn't have built.
And so primarily do you do portfolio loans with them or do you do just like conventional or how have you been financing your deals? Do you do any seller financing or mostly just traditional?
I do. I just did a seller finance deal. I love seller financing.
This is like my dream. Really searching for like the classic single family home seller financed. I really want to find one of those. And I'm honestly a little afraid to ask people about it. So tell me how you did that.
Because
I think people don't understand seller financing very well. And that's like such a big mystery, but it's such a good way to scale.
It's such an easy, because there's no appraisal. Mm-hmm. And there's no terms that are set by the bank. You can literally propose any type of situation. There's mm-hmm. just, you both have to agree on something. So I did a seller finance deal a couple of years ago now on a single family home. I had just started my LLC and mm-hmm. I wanted to gain a little bit of a track record through the LLC. I need a seller finance deal. So I purchased this property for $42,000. Mm-hmm. I put the seller wanted $15,000 down. So mm-hmm. I think that was about 30-something%. I don't know.
Yeah.
Someone will do the math on that.
I'm really bad at mental math. I'm very good at spreadsheets, very bad at mental math.
Exactly. With this, the exchange rate was high. It was exchange rate. The interest rate was 10%. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Which was on the higher end, but it was amortized over 30 years. So the cool thing was that the payment's still only $299.17 a month.
Right.
And the property still cash flows like $500 because it's like this cash cow and it's fine. So it doesn't yeah. matter that it's 10%, but I do have a 5-year balloon and mm-hmm. that will be coming up.
Yeah.
Works. It's easy. It's not on my credit. It just ticks along.
Right.
I was able to do it through my LLC. So by the time I purchased this shortly before I sold the Texas property. So when mm-hmm. I went to the bank and needed the commercial mixed use loan through yeah. my LLC, they mm-hmm. saw that I already had a loan through it. And I recently, on a completely different way of doing it, closed on a portfolio loan of 3 properties
mm-hmm.
Recently, 20% down, but the exchange rate is only 8%.
Yeah.
But it's on a 5-year amortization.
Yeah.
And I know this seems crazy and people are going to be like, oh, that is so crazy.
That's real
crazy.
High. Yeah.
It's really high. But the great thing is the property's cash flow.
Mm-hmm.
I could literally have all 3 of them paid off in 5 years if I wanted to.
Yeah.
My plan
Your parents
is,
would be really happy with that.
No, they would be. They would like this one.
They would like that one. Look how short your loan term is. They're so excited.
Exactly. But I got a really great deal on these and they need some work. There's some maintenance and like things. I just demolished a garage at one of them actually.
I saw that.
So I'm going to stabilize these, fix them up. And then my plan is to refinance, not with my local bank, because I need to give them a break, but probably midway through next year, I might look at refinancing those into just a long-term conventional loan.
Mm-hmm.
They're worth a lot more than what I paid for them.
Yeah. And if interest rates are so good right now, it'd be nice to get rid of,
exactly.
unload some of those interest rates or balloons.
Yeah. But I think the cool thing is I've seen, investors even being able to negotiate very low down amounts with seller financing. I mean, it's really just up to what you can figure out between mm-hmm. the two of you. But I always, I like that at closing, I get the deed. So always take the property over. I remember mm-hmm. trying to figure out a deal with a seller in Memphis, Tennessee a couple of mm-hmm. years ago, but he wanted to hold the note, but it was going to be a land lease type situation. So he didn't want to sign the property over to me.
Right.
And I'm like, my attorney was just like, don't do anything like that. Always have the deed in your name, take ownership and just have them. So that's like traditional way of doing it, but I think it's really great.
Yeah.
Even sometimes they want either more down or the interest rate's always probably, I mean, the interest rate's going to be higher, especially now. But if you can make the numbers work, it's a great way to get in if you don't have great credit
mm-hmm.
or if you don't want to deal with all the closing costs. And, you know, I think it's a great strategy.
Yeah. And I think you're really big into like the cash flow numbers too. So I'm sure seller financing kind of gives you the flexibility to hit your numbers.
Exactly. Yeah. Cash flow is my thing.
Yes. Cash flow,
like,
is leveraging.
Exactly. But it hasn't come easy either. You know, it's like a lot of, like I said, it's a lot of micromanaging, especially like the areas that I invest in. So it's great reward, but the properties are older.
Mm-hmm.
The turnover's higher. I have a lot of Section 8, which a lot of people aren't comfortable with. They're in higher crime areas. So it's not without its problems. And you definitely mm-hmm. have to, it's not a sit back and just lay on the beach with a mojito and suck in the
right.
cash flow and live happily ever after. It's very still very management intensive properties.
Yeah.
But I honestly, the great cash flow aside, I really feel like I'm making a difference in the blocks and in the streets that I'm investing in, and I'm bringing these properties back to life. And like, I see that the tenants are excited.
Yeah.
I had the mayor and the police commissioner on one of my blocks the other day because I've been blowing their phone up about the crime, and there's some terrible properties on the street that I own 6 properties on actually now. And there's some abandoned properties and there's a squatter in one of them. And I was just like, I am not having this anymore. And so I've just been calling the
good for
the
you.
Mayor's office. That's awesome. And the police. And I am just like all about it. And my tenants called me the other day and they're like, guess who was on our street? And I'm like, I don't know who. They're like, the mayor was on our street yesterday. Like, the mayor has never been on our street. So
that's awesome. I think
if I can just try and change my few areas that I invest in and make them better and try and eliminate some of the crime, then that's the massive payoff for me. And that's what I'm most focused on at the moment, is just trying to kind of work with the city and do what I can to like make these places better.
And like safer for the families that want to live there.
Exactly. And it was really sad. I spoke to a tenant not long ago. She had left and moved to Georgia because she was afraid to stay in the house, my house, because there was a shooting and a murder there. And she said that she had told management and they didn't take any notice. And it really made me feel so, that's when I started calling the police and I was like, listen, I have tenants that are afraid to be in their homes and this never used to be a bad block.
Right.
And so I'm going to speak up for them and, you know, try and do, like I said, what I can. And, you know, I mean, like, it's hard because a lot of out-of-state investors, like I said, they're not present. Right. They don't care. They get this Section 8 voucher. You know, the house gets overgrown, the tenants are unhappy and complaining and not feeling safe, but no one cares.
Right.
But, like, I want to care about them. And, like, I don't want people feeling like I want tenants, or I want the city, or I want my name and my company, Hinuera Properties, to be known as like a landlord for the people and for these areas. And like, oh, I really want to rent one of those houses because I know she's going to take care of the rats, or like, you know, I don't know.
Right. Yeah.
It's silly, but I think,
no,
it's
I don't think
important.
It is at all, because I like taking care of people. And I'm like, once you've seen people's like property management companies and how they don't take care of people, you're like, oh my gosh, let me at this. I'll do great because I actually care about humans and like living conditions and the fact that your fridge is 1,000 years old and the lights don't even work. And it's like,
I know.
I mean, I can Facebook Marketplace myself a pretty good fridge. So.
Yeah. And it doesn't have to be stainless steel and it doesn't have to be perfect, but I mean,
I've gotten some good stainless steel finds on Facebook Marketplace, but I've also found some like beautiful, like French door, just white appliances, and they've been fantastic.
Yeah. So I like the white ones. Yeah.
The white has been really good because I can find like a nice like French door one with the big like pull out freezer at the bottom on Marketplace pretty often. And then the tenants think it's fancy, but then it's not like the stainless price. And so
that's my
constant search on Facebook Marketplace. And like, find me this very specific fridge and I'll buy all of those and I need somewhere to store them.
I'm like,
the garage is just
stoves.
Full of like weird stuff. Gas stoves is my other one.
Good.
They're very hard to find a good gas stove.
Yes. Yeah.
Because they also tend to be pricier, but I mean, they hopefully will last longer.
They're better, but
And I'm like, and everyone kind of wants a gas stove, so I can provide that in houses. And then if you can find one where the knobs aren't on the front, so then I feel like it's less of a, like, they're going to burn the house down risk. That's also
good idea. Good point. Didn't think of that.
We were buying a house and I was like, oh, we're going to switch out this stove. And the lady herself was a landlord and she was just looking to get out of her properties. And she was like, oh, well, I never put gas in here because I was worried the kids would come and turn the knobs and like burn my house down. So now I search very carefully for like gas stoves with knobs in like on the back of the appliances versus on the front like they usually are. So
right.
You can find them both ways.
See, you didn't think of that.
Do you refinance any of your properties? Like, do you do this BRRRR method at all? Or are you mostly just...
I haven't yet. I haven't.
I haven't either.
Yeah. I fantasize about it in my mind all the time.
It's like the sexy term that everyone wants to get into do.
Because I really want to do it. But I just haven't... It's just kind of hasn't been my strategy. I would say most definitely I'm a buy and hold. Mm-hmm. And then as situations have come up, I've flipped a few properties just either because the market's gone up or I'm in the middle of a turn in between tenants and I'm like, this property is really cute. And what could we get for it right now if I do this instead of this? And I'm like, okay, let's sell it. And then I'll reinvest it, you know?
Right.
So I haven't done a burr. Right now I have a 3-unit that's listed for sale. Mm-hmm. I purchased it. I mean, it's sort of a burr, but it's not because it was occupied.
Yeah.
I purchased it couple of months ago. It had massive code violations, it had lead paint, complete disaster, tenants well under market. So I gave it a full paint job, put some new appliances in, fixed some issues, a new hot water heater, you know, nothing major, raised the rents a little bit, and it's on the market now. So if that sells for what I wanted to, I would say that's, but it's still a flip because I'm not going to refinance it. But right. I did consider refinancing it at one point.
Yeah.
But then I was like, oh, I don't know if I really want to hold on to this place, you know.
But I like that your strategy is different because I feel like everyone is like burr and like suck out all your cash and do all these things.
It's kind of cool.
The model makes sense, but I also like hearing your method of doing it because we're probably more similar than I'm still buying most of mine like 20% down on portfolio loan.
Right.
I like having a little bit of equity in my properties. So I'm like, I don't really
mind.
I like that too.
Also, I'm wondering right now with the market, with appraisal and just the availability of financing. And it really comes down to what your loan to value, what you can get, pull out. I mean, I'm sure banks now are like on cash out refis are probably like 70% loan to value, you know?
Right.
I don't know.
I've heard of a lot of people getting stuck in their burr deals too lately because the loan wants a bigger like loan to value number. So I guess it just depends too on the lenders. So it's like, what's your kind of target cash flow? Because you aim for a high cash flow number, don't you?
I am high cash flow. So, I mean, it depends on my multi-units. I'm like a couple of hundred at least. Mm-hmm. A unit on my multis, but like my singles at least 400. I mean, it's really quite high, but
yeah,
I think I'll be able to streamline that even more now because I'm going to be way more on top of maintenance and I'm going to try and dial that in because that was a big expense, maintenance and repairs, of course, through property management. Interestingly, that was high, even though I don't think there was a lot of maintenance going on. But also now, of
your
course,
cash out didn't match what the properties look like.
Exactly. Also, right now, you know, I'm paying myself the property. I'm saving the property management fee, although I am spending quite a lot of money at the moment getting on top of stuff that should have been deferred maintenance and things. So I'm kind of like spending twice as much at the moment on that kind of stuff.
Right.
And, you know, trying to find the right contractors and the right price and how much I need people for certain things. So it'll be interesting to see. I need a couple of months, I think, to see how much money I'm going to save by self-managing or if I'm actually going to end up spending more money because I'm doing more repairs and maintenance. And, you know,
you can only really get to so many levels of repair. So I kind of like front loading things. So you're probably kind of in that. You didn't front load it, but now you're going to, since you're kind of taking over. So you probably have like a couple of years of catching up
just
on all your CapEx type stuff.
And I think that's okay. I mean, I really get a lot of pleasure out of seeing that and just knowing I can sleep at night, like, oh, that property's got a new bathroom or like, and nothing crazy. Like I'm not putting tile.
Just like a new toilet. You feel like you've like ruled the world and it was like
$80. A new toilet.
Like $85 like is my favorite toilet at Menards. And I'm like, it's ridiculous how exciting that is to people, but.
I know. I literally like a new toilet went in one of my properties the other day and they were so stoked. It was really great. I mean, and it had been kind of offside. I don't even know how people are using it, like terrible.
And, like, actually, and it's not very expensive to fix, and
it's
it's
not. And just like I have a friend of mine,
you don't feel like there's creatures growing in it either. That was the other, like, when you open the back of the tank and you're like, I can't even with whatever is happening inside this toilet.
I mean, I've seen some bad stuff, and like it seems to be subfloors in bathrooms. I'm replacing those left, right, and center at the moment. Mm-hmm. It's because tubs aren't caulked properly. There's leaks. Toilets are leaking. I had $1,000 water bill on one of my singles recently because the tenant hadn't, you know, the toilet just been leaking.
Yeah.
And maintenance hadn't gone and fixed it. So, I mean, that bill should have been like $60.
Yeah.
$1,000.
I don't know if I've ever seen a $1,000 water bill. Mine's like $40. I was shocked. You're like, I didn't know that was possible. Do I set a record?
Someone needs to go to the house because I'm sure it's floated away by now.
Like, seriously. Yeah.
Nuts.
No.
So anyway, I covered that, but I had to tell her, like, listen, if this happens again, we're going to have to charge you for some of it because you have to tell us if the toilet's leaking or not, you know, like, right. Cause that's a big deal.
Have you thought about changing your leases at all to reflect, like, if your fridge breaks, I don't want to replace the food or anything, like, since you've kind of started self-managing, are you thinking of lease tweaks as you go through?
I need to. I haven't got to that point yet. I think I've just been so, like, drowned in figuring everything out. It's like, I'm just on the top of the water, but, like, you know, but that's a good point. There are a few things that definitely that have come up that I'm like, all right, like, for example, one of my single families, all the single family properties, they're supposed to take care of their own lawn care. Mm-hmm. And I had a tenant tell me they bought a new lawnmower the other day and they were really excited. And then I have one tenant that's like, when are you going to come and mow the lawns? And I'm like, never, because that's your job. Like, you have to mow the lawns. So I can't pay. And I really have to get better at putting my foot down and being like, well, this is, but sometimes the rules aren't clear and the leases from old owners or old managements are, you know, they don't state it clearly what the roles are. And I think it's just educating tenants too and being like, all right, this is how we really want to do this. But even if you've done it this way in the past, this is where it should be. So, I mean, sometimes maybe they just don't know, but a couple of things like that, you know, I mean, another tenant of mine had, she moved in the backyard, had quite a lot of trees in it. She's like, there's a lot of insects coming. Mm-hmm. And she's like, and I'm like, oh yeah, that is horrible actually. So I took care of the landscapers in and they cleaned the whole backyard out and got rid of everything. And she's happy now. But I said to her, I'm like, you need to maintain it. Like, because this is your backyard and you can do anything you want in it.
Yeah.
But if you let it grow, I'm not going to come and take care of it.
Do again. It again.
Like, you can take care of it. Mm-hmm. So just kind of stuff like that.
Yeah. Setting those expectations and sticking to
them. Yeah. But also so that they know that I want to help them out and like if they need help with stuff to reach out, but also like, you know, this is your responsibility or whatever. But amazingly, a lot of my tenants in my multifamily properties, just they're terrible with the trash. They won't take the trash to the curb. I don't know if I need to have a trash to the curb convention and go and teach them how to do it. They will not do it. So it's like, oh my goodness.
Can you offer them like a, like someone gets like something off their rent a month if they just take the trash out?
They have to because, and the other thing is like mattresses and appliances, they'll just put them and I get tickets from the city because you can't just put stuff out. Like you have to call them to do a pickup.
Right.
They'll just put them behind on the side of the house. Or around on the porch, or they'll just leave them out the front and then I'll get a call from codes like, there's a mattress on the front. Oh, great. So then I have to bring my trash guy. He has to take, I have to pay for it.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's a bit of push and pull, but.
Have you ever thought about doing your own like property management company that you manage? I was just talking to, I think David at the DIY Landlord, we were kind of talking about this where I'm like, I would love to like self-manage and kind of build out like a team of humans to like do the role and then kind of manage that. Because I don't like the idea of property management companies, but I also don't like the idea of being involved in the calls for the rest of my life. So I'm always like thinking about working towards that. And I don't know if that's ever crossed your mind as you've been like delving into all of this.
It's almost too soon. Like right now, the thought of managing someone else's properties as well is just like,
that is true. Shoot me. You're like, I'm good. But I have enough.
It's interesting because I did approach it. So with building the team and finding the people that were kind of in line with how I want my properties maintained and how I want my tenants treated, which I think is really important.
Yeah,
those people represent me. And I think once I have that system and that team together, it will be really easy to scale. And right. I have seen that there is a need for that in my market.
Yeah. Because I'm like, I could see you like hiring employees and kind of imparting your wisdom on like how to treat people well and kind of like doing that side where you're like, you're not day to day managing it, but you're kind of managing. You need like a team of personal assistants, I think is really what you need.
Yeah. And like I have one now and she's really great. And I know that she could take on a lot more. I think it's just, you know, the other thing is in New York.
That's my life goal is to have a personal assistant. That's amazing that you have one of those.
Yeah. Well, she's up there, but I mean, she's like my personal assistant for this stuff. And it's
for, great. Yeah. For real estate though. Yeah.
Yeah.
Makes sense. And well, 30 units, hourly, I feel like you need to for your sanity. To some
I
degree.
Just need stuff. I just need someone to run stuff by. Cause sometimes I'm like, oh, this tenant just called and I don't know, like, what am I supposed to tell them? And she knows, she's done some property management herself, managing herself. And like, I know she wants to open her own thing at some point. So it's kind of perfect. And
that is perfect.
But in New York State, you know, you have to have a broker's license.
Mm-hmm. I did not know that.
So I would
New York has all the regulations. Yeah.
Oh, I know. They make it so difficult. So one of, you know, I would have to get my license and then be a broker. But that's if I'm receiving money on and managing properties on behalf of other people, you see. So I can do it myself for myself. But like if I was to help my friend James, say, and he has a couple of properties, if I'm collecting rents and depositing them into my bank account, it would be illegal. But at some point, I think if this goes well, I mean, it's really just who knows at this point, but I'm loving it so far. Yeah. Interestingly, though, it has taken away from, I do not have the time to find new deals right now.
Yeah.
That's the only thing. And that's what everyone says. Like, it's worth it to pay the money for management so that you can focus your time on
deal finding.
Deal finding. But I honestly feel okay.
Maybe
right
this
now.
Will be I've like grown. Your 1 year of like growth and learning, and then you'll kind of revisit.
Fine. Mm-hmm. I've pushed so hard to get to this, you know, 30 units. And to be honest, like, I think there is the danger of scaling too quickly.
Yeah.
And I think by doing this, it makes me reconnect with my model, with my properties and be like, I mean, I could get to 50 units, but if my properties are not being well maintained and my tenants aren't happy, I'm cash flowing, but like, am I really doing the best job that I can? Probably not.
Right.
Can I put that I have 50 units on my Instagram? Sure. But like, is it even real? Do you know what I mean? So I feel like
these people arbitrarily put out this unit number and it's like, there's no like pride of ownership there. It's like the big fancy number, but
hands on. And I mean, not to say that you have to be hands on, but I think this is a really good opportunity for me to just learn a lot. And then I can maybe set up a team. And I think, like I said, it's scalable, but like right now I'm okay with just being completely absorbed by it.
And I think the good thing is too, like, you've now tried a few different classes of properties. Like, you had your Texas experience, you started out with a little bit higher end in your area, you've gone down to like CC minus and kind of changed up. And so I think it'd be interesting to see too, like, after you self-manage for a while, if you like where you're at, if that's like your passion is like improving neighborhoods or kind of seeing like what fulfills you. And then, because I talked to, now I can't remember who it was, probably Coach Carson, about like, you don't want to like 10x your mistakes either, because what if you get into self-managing and you're like, okay, actually I want to like slide back up to B properties, or like, no, C minus is my passion.
You don't
know. Look at these neighborhoods I'm improving. This is awesome. And so I feel like you don't want to scale to like 100 units and then be like, actually, this isn't making me happy. So I think that's so important. Yeah.
You have to be happy. Like, I love what I do. And if it got to a point where I was miserable and I felt like I wasn't doing the right thing, like, I feel like Texas probably wasn't a challenge and I wouldn't have grown as an investor. And even just connecting with people and the people that I've met, even the last couple of weeks talking with contractors, just the stories and these new relationships that I have, it's so like humbling, but like, I feel like I have the support and it makes me feel really good.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm helping them and they're like, thanks for the work. And I'm like, no, thanks for picking up stuff at Lowe's and dropping it off there. And it's just people helping people. And it's
making
really
this
cool.
bridge dream happen for this poor lady who now, you know, renewed her faith in society, hopefully a little bit.
Exactly.
Oh, and I also like to ask people, like personally, I always like to ask people about debt. So I kind of really got my start with Dave Ramsey. How do you manage your personal finances separate than your business? Do you keep do you do personal debt? Do you believe in that? Because you leverage heavy on the business side. We're probably, you and I are both very comfortable with the 80-20 real estate leverage spot.
Yeah.
I think some people find that over leveraged. I find that legally what the banks will give me and I'm going for it. So.
Exactly. I mean, it's not 100%. 80%, there's a 20% buffer for a reason. I barely have any personal debt now. So I've worked at slowing. I've always been pretty good with that. More because I'm very protective over my credit score.
Yes.
I do have some debt on some business credit cards right now, just buying appliances and things.
Mm-hmm.
I have one personal credit card that it's my final one that I'm going to pay off.
Congratulations.
In the next month, and that is going to be zero debt. And then I can buy myself a car.
I promise myself,
but I have to have zero personal debt before I buy a car.
Yep.
So that's my goal this year. But
have you chose the car yet?
I have a couple of ideas, but
I'm car
really
shopping right
now.
So I'm trying to figure out because I actually drive around and like pick up my stuff sometimes off of Facebook Marketplace. I'm like,
so you need
a pickup truck. Seriously debated about getting a pickup truck. And I'm like, I don't know if that's like too much. So what I discovered was the Toyota 4Runners, like the bigger Toyota, like SUVs, some of the models have the rear window that slides down. So you could like,
very nice.
If I was like storing like lumber in my trunk and then I could like stick out the window, kind of like a truck. So I think that's the route I'm going because I'm like, it's like kind of a mom car, but then I can transport a baby, a stroller, and some wood. And then
it's efficient. You're good. I don't know. You know, I drive on the other side of the road. I learned to drive a stick in New Zealand. Yeah. We drive on the other side. So I'm not a super confident driver. I haven't driven in New York. I had a mini for a while in the city and that was super fun. So I'm kind of scared of big cars and trucks and things. So I mean, I really don't know at this point. I think I'll just have to see like where, you know, my husband and I are supposed to move to Palm Springs, California in a couple of months.
Oh, that's exciting.
Just to be out in some better weather and get away from the city. But
yeah,
you know, it's like the climate. I really don't know. I would love a Porsche one day. I know there's going to be, it's not all roses and whatever, sunshine and roses. This year, I'll have to get a few more properties.
Yes,
before that happens.
Me and Felipe talk about this all the time because he really wants a Tesla. And I'm like, wait until your rental properties buy you your Tesla. Like, I'm such a big fan of like, I'm like, buy the luxury car, but don't do it on debt. Like, buy it. Like,
don't do it on debt.
Bankrolled this car because I'm like, otherwise you're driving your luxury vehicle and you're fake. And
exactly.
He's like, you're crushing all of my Tesla dreams. I'm like, it's just happening.
I know.
But I'm like, that's why we do real estate is to buy fun toys someday. But I'm like, I want to buy it in the right way. So I'm like proud to drive it. Not like, oh, I pay monthly for this. And that monthly money could be going to my real estate. I want
exactly.
it to be like, my cash flow bought this.
It's the hard thing though, right? Because
I think about
that a lot. And I'm like, you know, I could afford to, that property could pay for that. You know, you've seen all the Instagram stories. Like that pays for that. This place for the car, this house. But
like if I had this many houses, it covers these expenses.
Yeah, but it's funny because the more you get or like the better the cash flow gets, there's always, I'm just addicted to recycling it and reinvesting it.
Same,
And so, but I think at some point, you know, I turned 40.
I'm jealous of your gas stove find. So I don't know, that could be the new cool thing.
I couldn't believe it. And it had been up for 10 hours and I messaged her, Diane, her name was. And I'm like,
and you're like,
I'm sure
it's gone.
I'm sure it was gone. She's like, yes. And I'm like, does it work?
Yeah.
She's like, yes. I'm like, can
Done.
I send my guy to pick it up?
Yeah.
She's like, sure. You're not going to rip me off or you're not a fraud, are you? And I'm like, absolutely not. I was wondering the same thing about you, Diane, because you're selling a gas stove for $150.
Right.
And then she told me she had the fridge. So she actually advertised the stove. And then she's like, well, I do have a fridge if you'd be interested. And I'm like, does it work?
Yeah.
How much? $150. She said, oh, well, I'll take both of them. $300.
Yeah.
Good to go.
Yeah.
So excited. That was great.
Do you just Venmo your guy then? Is that how
Venmo
you do it?
My guy.
Yeah.
He charged me $40 to pick them up and
drop
them in my garage. And then he'll take
for $150 fridge, $40 pickup is worth it. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. I was like, I'm good with that. That works for me. So,
That's awesome.
He recently got Venmo, actually. He didn't have Venmo. So that was a whole thing that we, you know, had to figure out. So
forth.
Now he's on Facebook and Venmo.
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
He's so connected.
Exactly. That's awesome. I think at some point it's going to be like, all right, I need to treat myself and be like, I can take a break and I can reward myself for this work. It's just when it's like, at what point am I going to be like, it's okay to not invest this money. I don't know. Right. Maybe it's going to be a flip and or
houses
like a
get
bonus.
So addicting too. I'm like, it's just so hard to like want to spend it on a car that goes down in value when you're like, this house would literally cash flow and pay me.
Exactly. So. But sometimes you need a car and sometimes you can, you know, you can write some stuff off. I barely buy any clothes now. I haven't bought a new purse. I don't buy shoes. I mean, it is the only thing I buy is like toys for my dog. And treats for her and literally like real estate things and fridges, apparently.
Yeah.
A lot of appliances lately are the new purses.
Yeah.
So
that's the cool thing that people are buying, a garage full of appliances.
Exactly.
This has been really fun. I want to wrap up with my big question is there anything that you personally outsource?
We do get our groceries delivered now.
That's
I mean, but that's kind of partly COVID and it's just Amazon Fresh. That's not super exciting.
That's still different.
You know what? Nothing right now. I don't outsource anything, but this has given me some ideas.
Yes.
Because I need to. Yes. I need to see, I don't have lawns because we're in an apartment here.
Right.
You know what I need to do? I need to outsource dog walking a couple of days a week where the dog goes away for the day and my husband and I can just have some quiet time with the two of us.
Yeah.
And not be bothered by her. She's very hands-on. People are going to be like, what do you mean? A dog is so easy. Well, she's like a small child and there's a ball on me most of the day at some point. So that is interesting. I think it's important, actually, Sarah, to take that time and like outsource, because literally one of the struggles that I've been having lately is just time. I do not, I haven't even been able to call my mom.
Yeah.
I have not had time. So I need to organize that better and I'm going to outsource something. I'll try and figure out what it's going to be.
Think about things in your day that you can simplify and let me know. Awesome. Well, thank you so much for talking today. This has been so interesting because I think you're so like humble about the fact that you've grown to 30 units and you're just like, oh yeah, you know, you just do it. I'm like, no, it's amazing how much you built this like out of state investing portfolio.
Thank you. You're
just kind of going out there and getting it. And there's so many people that are totally afraid to do what you're doing and it's awesome. And you just kind of figured it out as you went, it sounds like. And I think,
Well, if I can do it, that's what I tell everyone. Anyone can do it.
Oh, and I always like to say, are you handy at all? Because people need to learn that you don't need to be handy to do real estate.
I am not handy.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not. I mean, I know how to use a screw gun now and I just got a drill and it was really, really exciting. Like I hung curtains like a boss.
Drills are fun. I don't think I've ever hung curtains even. I mean, I grew up on a farm. I know how to hammer a few things, but like, no, not handy. Never did any handiwork on any of my properties. So you don't have to be handy. You don't have to be a U.S. citizen.
But again, it's just building network and your team and your systems.
Whatever you can't do, you can find someone that can do that.
Yep.
And you can make it work.
Because I think I love talking to other ladies that aren't handy also, because I'm like, I've learned that my spreadsheet skills and my like systems management, people management are really where it's at. And that's how you can scale. And it's fascinating. And people don't realize that. People think you need to fix toilets.
Your skill. No.
Yeah.
I would love to be Investor Girl Carter.
Oh my gosh.
Investor Girl Brit.
Yeah. Yes.
But like, that's never happening.
Oh, so. I know. And they're like, let me just like build some furniture. And I'm like, I thought about it a lot. I like looked at it on Pinterest. Couldn't quite do it.
Let me just put those shelves up. Like, that's not happening either.
Yeah. I'm decent with a screw gun, but the rest I'm hiring out. So I think that's such an important message for people that are interested in real estate or want kind of a cash flow option or some kind of side income to know that you don't have to be handy. You just have to go after it. So
Just do it.
I love it. Yes. This is such a good message. Thank you so much for chatting today. And
thank you for having
me. Message me with what you do to get your time back. Tell people where to find you. On Instagram, by the way. So
At themodel.investor.
My 2020 goal was outsourcing things and I did my lawn care.
Gosh, did you all just love this episode? I hope you're enjoying each of these podcasts as much as I am. If you are, please go subscribe to the podcast and spread the word by sharing your thoughts on Instagram. If you are not already aware, I'm pretty much obsessed with Instagram, so seriously, come find me. Instagram is the place where I'm going to announce every new podcast episode. I also share new products as I post them into my store. And I also am just going to be oversharing way too much about my personal life as a DIY landlord and a working boss mom. Thanks so much for listening.